Welcome to Questions in Sustainability, a science-based series that explores programs, people, and ideas in sustainability of food systems. I am Professor Paul Vincelli from the University of Kentucky, and I host this podcast, Questions in Sustainability. And it's really a pleasure to be able to find interesting topics that have relevance to sustainability questions. And today is no different than in any of our previous efforts. I think we've got a very interesting guest who will give us some insights into an aspect of sustainability that we all recognize is important, but with ideas and new techniques for assessing the impact of these practices on sustainability. It's a pleasure to be able to find these instances and be able to talk about them to our audience. So before we start, I'll say we appreciate our guests who offer their time and expertise in questions in sustainability. And of course, the views expressed by our guests, or by yours truly for that matter, do not necessarily represent those of the University of Kentucky. So with that, I'll introduce our guest, and his name is Professor Isaac Larson. He is from the Department of Geosciences at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. And his expertise is in areas of geomorphology and landscape evolution. And Isaac, it's a pleasure to have you here, and welcome to Questions in Sustainability.
Great. Well, thank you for the invitation, and I'm happy to be here.
It's going to be interesting. So before we start talking about the science, I would like to ask you, as I do with all our guests, to maybe just say a little something about your background. How did you develop an interest in either the broad area of geomorphology or this particular topic that we're going to talk about, or anything you want to share to help the audience know a little bit about you?
Sure thing. Well, I grew up in rural Iowa, surrounded by corn and soybean fields. So that has some relevance to what we'll talk about later. Graduated from a tiny little high school that unfortunately is no longer there just because of the changing rural demographics. And went to college up the road a bit in Minnesota, and had really no concept of the field of geomorphology or geology, but took an introductory course and sort of fell into it. And I was interested in science in general, but really didn't think about sort of pursuing an academic degree, post bachelor's. But I did a summer research experience in Alaska, and then that sort of really got me hooked on research, and decided to do a master's degree after that. So I went out to Utah State University and did a master's degree. And after that, I worked for a few years in the Watershed Science Program at Colorado State University, right after what was at the time the largest forest fire in the history of Colorado. And so I was working on a project measuring soil erosion after this large fire that was southwest of Denver, and decided to go on for a PhD. And I went out to the University of Washington in Seattle and did a PhD there, mostly focusing on Earth's really steep and tectonically active landscapes in the Himalaya and in the Southern Alps in New Zealand. But my advisor there, David Montgomery, was writing sort of popular books about soil and soil erosion and soil restoration. And the combination of sort of growing up in Iowa and being around somebody who was thinking about those problems at that kind of level sort of got me interested in this sort of project.
Yeah, really, very interesting background. And the forest fire was what year did you say, the big one in Colorado?
That was the Hayman fire, which was, I think, in about 2003.
Not at the same time as the ones that raced through Yellowstone National Park in a different year.
No, those the there were some earlier ones like the I think 88 was the big ones out in Yellowstone.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah. So okay, well, thanks for that introduction, Isaac. So the paper I'm going to read for the title of the paper for our audience, and that is Rates of Historical Anthropogenic Soil Erosion in the Midwestern United States. And that's the title of the paper. It's in a journal called Earth's Future, which is one I was unfamiliar with. It's a publication of the American Geophysical Union. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. And is that an open access paper or journal?
It's open access. It's a relatively new journal that AGU has started publishing in the last several years. But you know, really trying to bring all the science that community does about sustainability and the Anthropocene and Earth's Future and bring that together in a journal.
Yeah, so it's available to you folks. If you're listening, it's open access, so you can download a copy if you're interested. And so Isaac, I probably have more questions than we're going to have time to answer, but maybe you could start by just giving us the elevator speech or whatever it takes to sort of frame the work. Why was this an important contribution to put your energy into?
Yeah, well, maybe I'll just start with sort of the background.
Sure.
Of how I came up upon this study. So, you know, I mentioned I went to college in Minnesota, southeastern Minnesota, and my met my future wife who went to the college sort of across town, and one of her roommates got married at this little Norwegian pioneer church out in the countryside, and we went to the wedding, and after the ceremony, I was sort of wandering around the churchyard, and there's a cemetery surrounding it, and I sort of walked up to the edge of that cemetery, and there was a cornfield on the other side, and the corn was growing, you know, a couple feet below where I was standing at the edge of that cemetery, and so that was sort of, you know, you can think of that as one of those light bulb moments where I was like, well, there's been quite a lot of erosion that has happened at this location. And I was still in graduate school then, and so it was, you know, many years before I was able to actually get this project off the ground, but I thought about it a lot more, and you know, wanted to combine this work with other sort of measurements of, you know, soil carbon and other things, and thought, well, you know, cemeteries aren't really a great place if you want to do soil sampling. But I came across the idea that, you know, there are these tiny remnants of native prairie that are scattered around the Midwest, and they record that pre-agricultural landscape, the land surface as it was before farming began. And so I basically got the idea to try to go around to these little tiny prairie remnants and see if what I observed at that cemetery was more sort of broadly true. And it turns out it was. There are these little escarpments or steps that form have formed at the edge of these native prairies when there's a field. An agricultural field on the other side of the fence, just due to the amount of soil loss that's happened since the initiation of farming in the Midwest, and I sort of, you know, took on this work in terms of why put the effort into it is that, you know, we of course know and have known for a long time that, you know, soil erosion is problematic, you know, in terms of sustainability of agriculture, in terms of the impacts of soil erosion on downstream water resources, the impact of the addition of fertilizers that don't stay in the fields and go downstream. So we've known it's a problem, and you know, there's been lots of effort to measure soil erosion rates, and those measurements are typically done over relatively short timescales, years, maybe decades in some cases, but we we didn't really know or don't really know how much soil has been eroded, you know, since farming started in the Midwest. And so this, I thought, was an opportunity to try to address that question.
It's very striking. So for the benefit of, again, listeners, there's a figure in the paper called Figure 2A, and it's an image that's been actually picked up in popular media too, with showing basically what you call it an escarpment, a step basically, where the prairie was, the native prairie's soil line is quite a bit higher, maybe a couple feet higher than the adjacent cornfield. And it's really a striking picture, Isaac. So I hope listeners who are interested in this topic will go and look that up, because it shows, yeah, there's a different, like a steep, it's only a few feet, but the steep drop off at the interface between these two systems, you know, agro, or these two ecological systems. Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty pronounced step, and you know, we saw, you know, steps of varying height, you know, at all of the 20 different prairies that we worked on, mostly in Iowa and Illinois, but some sites in Minnesota and South Dakota, Nebraska, and Kansas. So we sort of have, you know, tried to find as many of these sites as possible, which is a little tricky, because there aren't many, you know, in most Midwestern states, there's something like, you know, less than 0.01% of the native prairie is left, and then it's a matter of getting permission from both the, you know, the person or the organization that sort of manages the prairie and the farmer who's farming on the other side of the fence to do the work. But we managed to get, you know, these 20 sites, and we went out with a high precision GPS unit, RTK GPS, what you might see surveyors, you know, using, which allowed us to do really precise, sort of, you know, less than or about centimeter scale precision measurements of the elevation. And so we and my student Evan Thaler did a lot of this work, do these surveys across the boundary between the field and the prairie at all these 20 sites, and then from those really precise elevation measurements determine how much soil had been removed from each of those sites since the initiation of farming. And then Evan went into mostly old land records that determined when, you know, when these areas were transferred from, you know, the U.S. government, you know, when they were originally part of the Louisiana Purchase into private hands, or in a few cases these were mostly in Illinois, there's some prairie cemeteries that used the dates of, you know, the oldest tombstones to figure out the timing of when settlement would have started in the region, and when to estimate when farming would have began. And from the height of that step or escarpment, and then the time since the start of farming, we were able to calculate an erosion rate, and averaged across all of those sites comes out to be about almost 2 millimeters per year, which may not sound like much, but geologically speaking, it's a very rapid erosion rate.
Let's talk about that. But I did want to step back and just
sure.
And comment that the steepness of the escarpment, the steps that you have in this photograph, is really very impressive. I mean, it's you'd think it that. My first thought was that wouldn't that become sort of muddied over time with just natural rainfall and so on? But these are quite obvious in the both in the photos and the data. And I wonder if that's you'll be able to answer this, but I wonder if it's that's sort of a testament to the stability of the prairie system, because it sort of provides protection for that escarpment over a period of many years. Is that what's going on?
Yes, we think the surface, the land surface in the prairie isn't really changing very much at all, especially over the sort of few century time scale since the start of farming. One of the main drivers we found of the generation of these steppes is just the act of tillage. So mm-hmm. plowing the fields and I think plowing along the edge helps in some cases to keep those steps nice and sharp and vertical, where if not over time, like you said, they'd probably diffuse out and be less obvious.
So just the sheer tillage practices are helping to maintain that escarpment for you.
Yes, and also we think that's one of the main main ways that the soil gets moved off of the landscape. So when we did these measurements at all these different transects at these 20 sites, and then we used some high resolution digital topographic maps from a technique called LIDAR, where they're basically produced by these laser pulses from an airborne instrument that's able to measure the time it takes for the laser pulses to return back to the instrument, and that gives a very, very precise estimate of the elevation of the surface. And these data have been generated now for huge swaths of the Midwest. I think we used maybe almost 400,000 square kilometers of data in this study, and that allows to generate really fine scale maps of topography. So the sort of sizes of the pixels are on the order of a meter or so, and we use those data to calculate something called topographic curvature, which is really just a measure of how convex or concave the landscape is. And what we found is that the height of those escarpments tended to trend with the how convex the landscape was. So you can imagine the more sort of sharp and pointed the sort of hilltops were, the more soil had been lost. And we also found that the maximum soil loss was also commonly right on the top of hill slopes, where you wouldn't expect there to be lots of erosion from water or runoff, because there's just no real source area to generate a lot of flow, which you'd expect farther down the slopes. And that led us to conclude that it's that tillage that is, every time the plow is going across the landscape, it's lifting up the soil and it's moving a little bit in the downslope direction. And over time, that has effectively taken the soil off of these hilltops and pushed it progressively down the slope toward the bottom of the landscape.
Yeah, very good. Thanks for explaining that. I that was an aspect of the paper that I didn't quite grasp it, at least the first time through. So thanks for explaining that. So Isaac, we're going to take a short break. I usually do that to just give an opportunity for a mental refreshment. I'll put in a very short bit of music to give everybody a chance to sort of reset. I know that helps me when I'm thinking about things. So folks, we're speaking with Dr. Isaac Larson from the University of Massachusetts. He's a geomorphologist, and he's talking about historical values for soil erosion and how he determined those. Very interesting work. And when we come back, we'll continue that discussion. And we're back. This is Paul Vincelli from the University of Kentucky. I'm the host for Questions in Sustainability. And our guest is Dr. Isaac Larson from the University of Massachusetts. And he's talking about soil erosion measurements over the course we're talking about maybe even up to a couple centuries. Is that right?
Yeah, on average from about sort of 1860 up to the present.
Okay, very good. And very interesting stuff, folks. Get a copy of the paper if you're interested in this material. It is open access. And so Isaac, you've explained that you had basically found 20 sites of native prairie, and all 20 sites there were these escarpments where you could get measurements of soil erosion at that site. Now, how do you actually use that information sort of into the broader landscape scale? How did you sort of upscale it, I guess, to be able to make conclusions about broader areas of the landscape?
Yeah, I mean, one of the sort of big headlines that's come out of this is, you know, we estimate that about 60 billion tons of soil have been eroded from our the broad study region in the Midwest, and we came to that number by again using that high resolution topographic data to calculate the curvature, the convexity and concavity of the landscape across the entire Midwest, and then based on our measurements we were able to estimate how much soil had been lost for a particular value of topographic convexity. And then with this big map of convexity across the region, we were able to come up with this estimate of just how much soil had been eroded. And so it's quite a lot of soil. And you know, one question is where has it all gone? And we think a lot of it has just moved from the hilltops down into the valleys or the low parts of the landscape. We've done some other work that has shown that if you look across the Midwest, the soil A horizon or that or organic rich horizon, you know, that's really good for crop productivity. Is missing from about 35% of the landscape in the Midwest, and it's almost exclusively missing from the hilltops and steep side slopes, and it's not missing from the topographic hollows or the concavities, and so a lot of the soil has just accumulated in the landscape, but of course some of it sort of outside of the kind of prairie pothole region where there aren't streams, you know, some of it leaves the fields in waterways and then you know heads on downstream.
So you all can conclude that the erosion rate, so how does the erosion rate compare to what we expected? I know you mentioned this, but Yeah, how is it quite a bit, two times higher? What was your estimate?
So the erosion rate, it's pretty similar to we did a compilation of all the sort of soil erosion measurements that have been done prior in the Midwest, and the distributions of our measurements and those prior measurements match up really well. So it's pretty comparable to prior measurements, even though those measurements are made over shorter time scales, which suggests that the Midwest has been eroding at a relatively high rate for since the initiation of agriculture. What we do find is that our region-wide estimate is higher by a factor of three or so than estimates that the U.S. Department of Agriculture has made across the region. And we speculate that one reason for that is that those USDA estimates don't include the role of tillage as a soil erosion agent, which we think is a pretty important factor that explains a lot of both the thickness of soil that's been eroded that we measured in this study, and also the loss of the A horizon from hill slopes throughout the region.
So there is some surprise in sort of the rate of erosion as a result of the study.
Yeah.
So what does it mean for us here? And actually, let me back up. And so you're looking at these escarpments that have history of maybe a couple hundred years. Does it tell us anything about, say, the most recent decades in terms of soil erosion rates?
It doesn't. So a limitation of this is that this just gives us a value that's basically averaged from today all the way to the start of farming. So what we can't pull out of this study is any changes in rates of erosion that have happened over that time interval. And you can imagine, lots of things have changed. Farming was originally done with draft animals, is now mechanized. So, there's a whole different style of tillage. Different conservation practices have been put into place after the Dust Bowl, for example. Most of the sites we study have been continuously tilled, as near as we can tell. At least a few sites have actually been sort of restored to native prairie, but most are still farmed and tilled and not in, say, with no-till practices, for example.
So there's still a lot of room for improvement in reduction in soil erosion.
There is, and it's sort of think about kind of bigger picture issues with sustainability. The estimate worldwide is sort of that 95% of the food that humans consume comes from soil, and degraded soils produce less food, or to offset the degradation, synthetic fertilizers have to be used to get those degraded soils to produce. And so the kind of two big issues are global population is growing, and every so often you hear these exclamations how we're going to have to produce more food on the land in cultivation to feed that growing population. And so reducing soil erosion, even restoring soils that have been degraded is one solution to that. We also hear a lot about how soils play a role in the carbon cycle. So there are there's 2 to 3 more times more carbon in soils worldwide than there is in the atmosphere. And so in terms of combating climate change, involving soils, one obvious thing is to try to keep as much carbon that is in the soil there as possible. And so reducing soil erosion is one way to do that. But then there's also potential to actually return carbon to these soils where it's been eroded, and now the subsoil or the B horizon is exposed on the surface. And that's sort of, in my view, it's sort of a win-win situation, because the soil organic matter is a key factor to soil fertility and production. So putting that carbon back in the soil helps farmers, helps with production. It also has potential to draw down carbon dioxide from the atmosphere.
Yeah, so the two things, I'm just repeating what you said, but I think they're important enough to make sure that they're emphasized. One is the carbon, the soil is as a sink for carbon, with 2 to 3 more times carbon as compared to the atmosphere. So a reminder of the importance of soil organic matter as a sink for carbon. And then the other was, I don't know why I never thought of this, but that degraded soils, eroded soils, there's a need for more fertilizer usage to sort of make up for the loss of productivity that the erosion has caused. So that's an element that I hadn't thought of.
Yeah, and it adds costs. It adds cost to the production. It lowers the profitability for farmers. The nitrogen fertilizer, it's pretty mobile in the soil, so a lot of it isn't taken up by corn, for example. So a lot of it ends up in either groundwater or surface water, and there are negative impacts to that. But if you have a healthy soil that's got lots of organic carbon, then you don't need as much fertilizer to have the high productivity.
Really interesting point. Very good. We've covered a lot of good ground, and I appreciate that. Is there anything, Isaac, that we've left out or that needs to be mentioned in your, before we close?
No, I think we've covered it.
Well, the last thing is to mention the fact that I've sort of taken on a personal mission of making sure that quality of life elements are part of my thinking in sustainability. Of course, you all listeners as well know about the sustainability triangle, and there's profitability for farmers and environmental stewardship. And then the third is triad is quality of life for farmers, farm families, rural communities, urban communities, everybody that eats. So that quality of life triad leg is one I like to emphasize at the end, and I do so by adding a piece of music that in some way that's completely idiosyncratic for me relates to the topic at hand. So I've chosen a tune from my brother's collection of jazz musicianship, and I'll play that at the end. That'll be the final piece of the podcast. So I'll surprise you with that. He's quite good, by the way.
Excellent.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, so we've been speaking with Dr. Isaac Arson from the University of Massachusetts, an expert in geomorphology, and we've been speaking about historical assessments of the historical rate of soil erosion in states in the Corn Belt area, and particular focus on Iowa. And it was really fascinating, and thank you very much, Isaac, for your sharing what you've learned.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And folks, my name is Paul Vincelli. You've been listening to Questions in Sustainability, and we hope to have you back again. Take care.